Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. We reach back into the vaults of ART for our next show. I've been playing ART episodes from I Love a Mystery, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. We take you to the lodge in Donner Pass, California for episode 7.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling with a silent relentlessness that gives the feeling of going on forever. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man. He is the fourth man Gale Stark has kissed in the last month, and who has died violently within 24 hours afterwards. Gale kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday, and last night, P.O., the caretaker, found him stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. He was just an old friend of Gale's, and had no business way off the beaten track up here near the hunting lodge. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find out why the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gale knows. And then there's another disturbing event. As a matter of fact, three other disturbing events. One, someone has cut the phone connection with the outside world and has smashed all the radios in the lodge. Two, Bruce Garrett was caught in the act of trying to strangle Gale. Garrett and Gale are engaged, and neither would give any explanation. Three, Mansfield, the venerable butler of the Stark household, has vanished. This is ominous, because Mansfield had promised to tell Jack and Doc a bloody tale of viciousness and desperation the first moment he could slip away to their rooms. But he has disappeared before he could talk. The lodge was ransacked, and the men even poked around outside in the drifts, but in the snow and utter darkness it was an impossible search. It was so late by now Jack sent everyone to bed while he and Doc took turns patrolling the upper hall. Thus everyone was under their eyes except P.O., the caretaker, and Jones, the new butler, who slept in the servant quarters behind the kitchen. And now, at 8 o'clock in the morning...
Jack? Jack, wake up.
Come
on, son, up and at him.
Huh? What's that? What's the matter?
Nothing. You told me you wanted to be woke up at 8 a.m. sharp, so it's 8 a.m.
Oh. Anything happened while I've been asleep?
Nope, everybody's been asleep in the sleep of the dead, seems like. I've been down and routed out P.O. and the new butler, Jones. They just slapping some coffee together so we can start our day out right.
Good.
That bird Jones knows his butler, I reckon. Anyway, he was right down to work in the kitchen like he knowed what he was doing.
He's the real thing, you think?
Sure, so does P.O. He said, "Some of my gun, Senor Jones, you sure are one fine butler for my goodness sakes."
Uh-huh. How's the weather out?
What weather? Except for snow and more snow, there ain't any.
It's still snowing?
Like it was never going to stop, and the blame stuff's drifted right up under the bedroom windows during the night.
Up to the second story?
I'm a blue and gold hippopotamus if it ain't. Stir that carcass of yours out from under the covers, and you can see for yourself.
Uh-huh. Look, while I'm taking a shower and getting into some clothes, do a job for me, will you?
It's according. What is it?
Go around and knock on all the bedroom doors and get people up.
Huh? What's the hurry?
We're investigating a murder, and I want to find Mansfield.
Okay, but son, folks, he's gonna hate you. Nobody's had more than about 5 hours of sleep.
Go on, and then hurry back. And tell Jerry to snap into something and come here. I want to talk to you two before we tackle the rest.
Okay.
Oh, and one other thing. Be sure that everyone is wide awake before you leave his door. Talk to him a minute.
Through the door, of course.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend walking into anyone's bedroom. And especially keep an eye on our lodger for the night, A.J. Ben.
Yeah, leave it to me. And you'd better snap into it on account of me and Jerry will be back in no time.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Jerry first, I guess.
Hey, what's going on out there?
Hi, Sugarfoot. It's Doc.
Oh, yeah? I thought it was some doggone woodpecker planting acorns for the winter.
They ain't any acorns this time of year. Can I open the door, Crack?
Wait till I pull the covers up to my chin.
Oh, shucks.
Okay, open up. Well, fancy meeting you here, sonny boy.
Hey, cute stuff.
Me, my nose? That's all you can see of me.
No, your hair spread out on the pillow. I always wonder how a girl slept all night and woke up with her hair all combed and beautiful.
Who said she did?
In moving pictures.
Oh, that was in pictures. Brother, I've been so tangled up in my hair some nights, I've felt like a mermaid caught in a sardine net.
Trapped like a rat, huh?
No kidding.
How'd you ever get out?
Now, hey, look. Did you come to my door at this time in the morning to exchange wit and humor?
Maybe not, but a little of it don't hurt.
Well, I don't feel very bright until I've had my coffee, so talk fast and then close the door.
Jack wants you to whip into something and come to our rooms for a confab.
Well, have I got time to do 1, 2, 3, 4 on the carpet and brush my teeth?
Yeah, he's taking a shower, but keep moving. I'll pick you up on my way back.
Back from where?
I'm waking everybody up. Ain't that a nice job?
Oh, you can have it.
Yeah, step on it. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Next is Jay Irvin himself. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. Stark, hello. It's Doc Long.
Ah, oh, come in. Come in, Long.
Okay. Hey, you're up and dressed already.
Yes, of course.
But after the night we had last night...
No matter what time I retire, I'm always up and ready to go down by 8 o'clock.
Well, that's what you call habit, I reckon.
Well, I don't know what else you could call it. You wish to see me about something?
Yeah, just that Jack wants me to get everybody up so we can get into this business of young Ogden's murder and Mansfield's disappearance again.
I'm frightfully upset about Mansfield. I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, we better leave that till we all get together. Oh, yeah, I went down and got Pio and the new butler to fix him some coffee.
Good. I'll go down and see what they can do about breakfast.
Good idea. This Jones feller seems to be all right.
I wish I knew who sent him and why.
Just like Bruce Garrett said last night, somebody seemed to know Mansfield was going to disappear, and he was getting ready for it.
Bruce Garrett said that?
He sure did.
I don't understand, Bruce. He isn't the same man at all anymore. Well, I'll go down about breakfast.
Let's see. On the other side of the hall comes Gail's room. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
It's Doc Long, Miss Stark.
Oh, just a minute.
Hey, you didn't need to hop out of bed. I just wanted to tell you, just wanted... Miss Stark, that there's the prettiest doggone bathrobe I've just about ever seen.
Bathrobe? Doc, this is a negligee.
It is, huh? Well, honey, when I get married, my sugars are going to wear one of them things all the time.
Oh, Doc, you're wonderful. 10 minutes ago, I thought I'd never laugh again, and here I am. What is it you really came to say?
Jack sent me around to wake everybody up.
Anything more happen?
Uh-uh. He just wants everybody around so we can talk to him. Hey, how come you was awake? Don't tell me you got a habit of getting up at this hour every a.m.
No, I've just been too upset to sleep soundly, I guess.
Your throat hurt?
What? Why do you say that?
I mean where that wonderful He-Man you're supposed to marry got his claws into you last night.
I'd rather not discuss Bruce Garrett so early in the morning. What made you think of it?
Why shouldn't I think of it? You got black and blue and orange and green marks on your throat till a person would think you were spoiling.
Really? My throat hadn't hurt much. I hadn't thought to look in the mirror.
Take a look. You'd be interested. I've seen toadstools in damp woods the color of your neck.
Ew, I look horrible.
Yeah, I'd wear a scarf or something around my neck if you didn't want to spoil folks' appetites.
To think that the man I was supposed to marry would do a thing like that.
Yeah, some bridegroom. Why'd he do it?
Oh, he was angry because I brought you and Mr. Packard here. And because Philip Ogden's body was found outside the lodge.
Huh. He was mad at you on account of Ogden's body being found up here?
Yes, I was just too ugly.
Well, that's me and Jack's business, ugliness. So shoot.
Well, he was jealous. He believed Phil Ogden came up here to keep a clandestine meeting with me.
Hey, if he thought that, then it's a natural. He came up on Ogden and stabbed him in the back and left his body in a snowbank.
No, I don't think so. Look, I'm getting dreadfully cold standing here in nothing.
Hey, what am I thinking about? Get your clothes on. We can talk all about this later.
Thank you. Mansfield usually brings coffee up. Nothing new about Mansfield, is there?
Uh-uh. But about the coffee, the new guy Jones is making some, and I'll see you get some.
Oh, thank you. You're the kind of gentleman I like knowing, Doc. You're sweet. Bye.
Well, I'll be doggone. Can that sweetheart put the pressure on when she tries? Mm-mm. Next comes Mr. A.J. Ben, who don't even belong here. Hey, don't do that.
Oh, it's you, Long. What's the matter?
Whipping your door open in my face like that scared living daylights out of a feller.
Oh, sorry.
And what the heck you doing up and dressed?
What's wrong with that?
Well, doggone it, Jack told me to come around and wake folks up, and so far Jerry Booker's the only one I found asleep.
Oh, I think that would be a pretty enjoyable experience.
Huh?
Finding Miss Booker asleep?
Look, Mr. Ben, you seen Bruce Garrett get his teeth knocked in last night on account of Jerry Booker.
I did indeed.
Well, just remember it, if you please.
Oh, I most certainly will. And now what can I do for you?
Just as I said, Jack wants everybody up and round. But while I'm here, you might tell me what you done with Mansfield's body.
What I... Oh, no, you're on the wrong track.
I don't know if I am or not.
Why?
Well, in the first place, you don't act to me like no guy that just wandered in out of a storm because you were lost.
What do I act like?
Like a guy in on the know. Like a guy who came here on purpose. Like a guy who maybe busted the radios and cut the phone wire so's we couldn't be in touch with the outside.
You make me out a very interesting fellow.
And I seen you monkey in with the light in the trophy room just before the fuse plug burned out.
Let me put you right about that. Long?
Huh?
If you can burn out a fuse plug by screwing a bulb in and out of the socket as I was doing last night, well, it can't be done. Try it yourself.
That's a good story.
It's the truth. Somebody turned out the lights at the fuse box down in the basement.
Why?
I don't know why.
All right, then. Who?
Well, it would have to be someone free to do it. Mr. Stark and Gail Stark were supposed to be in their rooms upstairs. They could have slipped down and done it. Or Bruce Garrett. I understand Mr. Packard had let him go just a few minutes before. Or maybe it was P.O. when he went after more wood. Or for all I know, there's a stranger in the lodge.
You're doggone right there is, and you're him.
You still stick to me, do you?
Didn't you whip out of the trophy room and follow Mansfield down into the basement?
And get myself hit over the head for my trouble?
That's your story. Jack said you didn't have a mark on you.
Very well. If you insist on me being the villain, I'll put on a Hindenburg mustache and a monocle and start to sneer.
Oh, wise guy, huh? I think one of the things we're going to do after breakfast is take you apart and find out what makes y'all tick.
Bitter men have tried, my boy.
And I think you're going to tell us just exactly what you're doing here, too.
Oh, you think that, do you?
That's what I said.
Well, well. Pardon me while I go down and sustain myself with a cup of coffee.
Just a minute.
Your hand off my arm, please. Thank you. No hard feelings, of course.
The heck they ain't. Well... All I got left is Brother Bruce. Wonder how he's feeling this morning. Garrett seems to be a sound sleeper. Now, ain't this interesting? Better look into this. Yep, it's open. Well, I'll be doggone. Hey, Garrett, didn't you hear me a knocking? Laying there in bed. Garrett, what's the matter with you?
Get out of here.
Now look, sport.
Get out of my room before I shoot you dead in your tracks.
You mean you got a gun in your bed there with you?
I have.
That'd be murder, though, fella, shooting a guy in cold blood.
No clown of a detective's gonna invade the privacy of my quarters. Now get out.
Okay, but I would like to get a glimpse of that shooting iron you keep talking about.
If I show it to you, get back.
Sadizzy.
Stop it, you fool.
That's how they spill guys out of bed in the army, and I don't see no gun neither.
If you think you can manhandle me?
Manhandled Gail Stark, didn't you? Now get up on your feet.
I'll have you behind bars for criminal assault.
Oh, hush your face. On your feet!
Take your hands off of me!
Get your clothes on and stop telling me the terrible things you're gonna do to me.
Listen, you. You listen to me. I'm gonna...
Hey,
I'm gonna...
You are a little crazy at that, aren't you?
Will people stop saying I'm crazy? I'm not. I'm not, I tell you.
Oh, no, no, please.
We found him.
Hello.
We found him.
Everybody come quick. Where is everybody?
Hey, something's the matter. I better get going.
Hey, Doc, what's the matter?
Something's busted loose downstairs.
Golly!
Hey, what's going on?
Mansfield, they did this to you.
Huh? They found Mansfield? Hey, he's been stabbed to death.
See? Jones, she find him in snow outdoors.
Doggone, stabbed in the heart and froze stiff.
Si, senor. This makes two frozen corpses for the lodge this winter.
Forgive me, Mansfield. Forgive me.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Renaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield, and Richard Haviland as Tuffy. Thanks also to Harry Thiel and Mike Wheeler. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Here's Episode 8.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery.
O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second-story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge, high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man, a friend of Gail Stark's, and the fourth man to die in the last month after she had kissed him. Gail had kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday. He was found by P.O. the caretaker, stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find the reason for the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gail knows. But why is Mansfield, the aged butler, dead, and by whose hand? Jack and Doc have gathered the whole group together for investigation.
Now then, we've got the whole group together, and I don't want anyone to interrupt my questioning unless he knows positively someone is telling a deliberate lie in answer to my questions.
Oh, the big, big question and answer, ma'am.
Shut up, Garrett. You ready with your notebook, Jerry?
Shoot when ready.
Peel, you and Jones are first.
See?
Yes, sir.
No, turn so you're facing me, Jones.
Yes, sir.
That's better. Now, I want to know exactly how you happened to discover the body of Mansfield.
But I did not find Mansfield, senor. This Jones here.
All right. You keep quiet then, P.O.
See?
Go ahead, Jones.
Well, there ain't much to tell, mister. Ian, you know how the snow's drifted up against the house, clean up to the second story windows?
Yes.
Well, P.O. here said he had to tunnel through the drift so he could get out to the stables and take care of the horses.
See? Horses must be fed and have a drink of water.
Go on, Jones.
Well, I ain't shoveled snow since I was a kid back in Wisconsin, and I thought it might be kind of fun, so I offered to help.
Uh-huh.
So, while Peel was getting wood out of the shed to build up the fires, I started tunneling through the drift, and the first thing I knew, there was the old boy's foot a-sticking out of the drift.
Oh, poor Mansfield.
And that's all?
That's all.
Pio.
See?
Are you in the habit of letting someone else do your work for you?
Monsignor!
Are you?
Senor Packard, that is most unfair thing anybody ever said to me.
Just answer my question.
For 2 years, I have been caretaker for this frozen corpse lodge. Is that not so, Senor Stark?
Yes, Pio.
I have been good caretaker. Yes? No?
I've had no complaint.
Have I ever asked anybody to do what is my job to do? No.
You let Jones tunnel through the snow for you.
See? Because he asked to tunnel. Because it make him remember when he was a little boy. But I do not ask him to do it.
Okay.
I don't get what you're driving at, Packard.
Ben, I ask no one to speak unless he knows someone is lying. To your knowledge, is someone lying?
No.
Then keep still.
I still think we have a right to know where your questions are leading.
See? I do also.
Jack, you want me to persuade Mr. Ben a little?
No, I'll answer his question. I wanted to know if P.O. put Jones to work on the tunnel deliberately.
Why?
So that it would be Jones and not he who found Mansfield's body.
But Mr. Packard, that would mean that P.O. knew that Mansfield was there?
Exactly.
Senor, you say I killed Mansfield. You say I put this poor old man out in snow.
Sit down, Pio.
Senor, if you say this thing...
Sit down! Now then, somebody in the lodge here has committed 2 murders. Maybe it was Pio and maybe it wasn't. But he's just as much a suspect as Jones or Ben or Stark or Bruce Garrett here.
Or Gale. I hate Packard.
Bruce, how could you?
Yes, or Miss Stark, if you like.
You don't think it might be someone outside, someone we don't know about?
Aren't you the man who told me we were utterly and entirely cut off from the outside world?
Yes, I did.
Well, there's your answer to that.
But, Signor, why did you pick on me? Why did you pick on Pio? I am only caretaker.
I'm not picking on you. I'm taking you apart just as I'm going to take everyone else in this place apart. And you'll have to admit, Pio, it would look pretty bad if you'd been the one to discover the body of Mansfield this morning after bringing in Phil Ogden's corpse last night.
Yeah, the guy who always knows where the body's buried.
Ah, I see what you're getting at. A very good point.
But the thing I don't understand is why anyone would want to kill poor old Mansfield. What was the object?
Very good question. Would anyone like to answer that, Miss Stark?
No.
How about you, Garrett?
Don't throw any of your insinuating questions in my direction, Packard. I don't know anything, and I don't want to know anything.
Well, then, I'll have to tell you myself.
You know?
Yes. Mansfield was killed because he had a story of murder to tell me.
What's that?
Yes. He was only waiting for the opportunity of getting to me. He was killed when he was, because he was to have been the next person I was calling into the tap room last night for questioning.
Oh, no.
Amazing.
Somebody deliberately blew the fuses, knowing Mansfield would go to the basement and put in new ones. In the dark, this person stabbed the old man and tossed his body in the snow.
Did you find where it was done, Jack?
Yes, on the first landing going down into the basement, where we found Mr. A.J. Ben a few minutes later.
Is that true? How do you know that's where the murder happened?
Because there was blood on the landing, and there was blood on your coat where you'd fallen down in it. I see you're not wearing the same coat this morning.
No.
No, he's wearing one of mine. He said his coat had been torn.
Uh-huh. In spite of the fact you claim to have been attacked, there was no sign of a cut or abrasion any place on you. Therefore, the blood must have been from Mansfield.
I assure you, I was attacked. Do you think I'd have laid down in a pool of blood on my own account?
You might.
That's nonsense.
No. Perhaps in the dark you didn't realize the blood was there. Or if you murdered Mansfield and it got blood on you in the act, you might lie down in it. Be a good explanation. Anyway, I want a good look at that coat after we finish this.
Yeah, if you wish.
Now then, before we leave Jones entirely, one more question. You still maintain Mr. Stark here phoned the Great Western Agency in Reno and said he wanted a new butler and the agency sent you?
Yes, and you can bet your sweet life I wish they never had.
And you maintain you didn't put in such a call, Mr. Stark?
I did not.
Okay, that's something we'll never know the truth about until we get back and check with the agency. Now then, Mr. Stark, This is going to be painful, but I've got to know the truth.
Yes?
You told us that Gail is not your daughter, but your stepchild.
Yes?
But you didn't tell us that you have no money in your own right, that every cent you have is in reality Gail's, and that it will be taken from you when Gail marries.
Who told you? This is abominable.
No one told me. I got it out of the papers in the safe in your study.
You opened my safe last night?
The doc did. He's good at things like that.
I'll have the law on you.
Don't bother with that sort of talk. If you're the murderer, I'll have the law on you. And if you're not, you'll thank me for doing everything I can to head him off before this is over. You admit your finances are as I state?
Yes.
Then all this lodge, your estate in Hollywood, everything is actually Gail's.
Mr. Packard, you have no right to humiliate my father.
Just a minute, Gail. And that is the real reason why you have taken Gail into your home since her mother's death. Because actually, this is Gail's home, and she is befriending you.
That's not true. Until I married, Jay Irving has the full use of all the money and property left by my mother.
Exactly the point I want to make. If Jay Irving Stark can keep his stepdaughter from marrying, he will enjoy all his wealth indefinitely.
That is all quite true. But will you tell me why it is necessary to drag out before all these people to my utter humiliation?
Because it's the very best motive in the world to explain the murders of the three young men in Hollywood and Philip Ogden up here.
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. They ain't the guys who were going to marry Gail. There's the boy right over yonder. Mr. Bruce Rotten Spoilt Garrett.
Yeah, the only word of intelligence spoken this morning.
He's the boy what's a-gonna marry Gail, so if Mr. Stark's a-killing off potential bridegrooms, why ain't he giving Garrett 40 whacks?
Yes, Packard, that's a very important question. Why haven't I killed Garrett? Who, by the way, is the only man Gail's ever been engaged to in her life.
I don't know yet. There's something ugly here.
Ugly?
Yes. Between you and Garrett.
Ha! Listen to him.
I don't know what it is, but there's something between the two of you that's so rotten it smelled the minute I came into this place. Something nasty and unhealthy, and your stepdaughter, Gail Stark, is being made the goat.
No. No, really.
You're afraid of something. Perhaps you don't know what it is, but it's something that's cast a shadow over you, and you are afraid to talk, because whether Stark loves you or not, you love him, and you'll do anything he wants if he tells you he's in trouble.
No, that's not true.
You'll even go as far as engage yourself to an undisciplined, utterly despicable playboy who shows very definite signs of mental deficiency.
Jack, look out!
Hey! Jerry, you hurt?
Don't move, Garrett. I've got you covered.
The mirror broke right out of your head. Are you hurt?
No, I guess not, but I'll be combing Looking Glass out of my hair for a week.
Keep him covered, Ben. What do you throw at me?
Here it is. Pool ball. Well, I'll be doggone if it ain't the black old eight ball itself. Boy, if he'd ever popped you with that old pool ball, you'd have looked mighty sick, son.
Yes. Jerry, there's a little cut on your neck.
There is? Oh, blood!
Miss Stark, take her upstairs and put some iodine and a piece of cotton on it.
Yes, of course. Bruce, you must be insane.
Why, you little smooth-faced two-timing...
Hold it, Garrett.
Come on, Jerry.
Boy, is friend Garrett in a temper.
Now then, everybody sit down. Sit down, Garrett.
I will not sit down and listen to myself continuously being referred to as a madman. Oh, I will fight every man in this house. I'll break every piece of furniture in this place before I'll sit down and take what you've been handing out.
Son, you keep on raving like that, and we're going to have to put you in a straitjacket.
Just try it. Just try it.
Look, Garrett, I'll make you a bargain.
Yeah, what?
If you stop all this foolishness and cooperate with us, I'll guarantee that nobody will again mention the word madness, nor any of its synonyms or our words of association. Is that fair enough?
I don't believe your word's any good.
How about giving us a try?
Well...
Okay, everybody sit down. Sit down, Jones.
Yeah.
Hey, where's Pio?
Here I am, senor.
What? Where?
We'll all be doggone under the couch over there. Come on out, Pio. War's over.
Yeah, well, for goodness sakes. I am glad about that, you betcha. How I get under here? It's so tight a place, I don't know.
Here, I'll give you a hand. Can't have you stuck under the couch. Let's go.
See?
Oh, there you are.
See? My goodness. But you almost pulled my arm off. Did anybody get shot to pieces?
No. No one got shot.
Which brings up the point, Ben. What are you doing with a gun?
I always carry a gun.
Uh-huh. Mind if I have a look at it?
Why not?
And about the way you draw that there shooting iron, son, there's only one other hombre I ever seen who could draw a gun that fast from that stance.
That's so?
Yep, he's from Texas. Real rattlesnake of a guy. I think they got him over yonder there in Alcatraz Island now, if I ain't mistaken.
That's so?
That's quite a gun.
Like it?
Uh-huh. So much, I think I'll keep it for a while.
No.
Yes.
Hand me that gun.
Well, I'll be doggone if he ain't got its mate. Mm. Honest to goodness, two-gun Western man.
Hand me that gun.
With the greatest pleasure.
Thanks. And what makes you think I'm a Western man?
Ain't no son of a gun east of Texas can handle guns like that. No man.
Oh, thanks. Look, Packard, no hard feelings, but I did want my gun back.
Oh, quite all right. Think nothing of it. But there is one thing.
Yes?
I would certainly have liked to have got a description of the man there chasing in that manhunt on the outside.
Manhunt?
Yes, we caught some of it on the air just before all the radios were smashed and the phone line was cut.
Yeah, I wonder who could have done that.
Oh, no! No!
Jack! Doc!
Oh, no!
Gail, stop it!
Listen!
Jack! Doc! There's another dead man up here! He's lying on my bed!
Oh, a dead man lying on her bed. Now who's crazy?
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Renaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield, and Richard Haviland as Tuffy. Thanks also to Harry Thiel and Mike Wheeler. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Better by Birdseye. Birdseye Frosted Foods present the Dinosaur program with Wally Brown, Robert Emmett Dolan and his orchestra, the Joseph Lilly Singers, our special guest Herbert Marshall, and...
Dinah, is there anyone finer than...
Dinah Shore!
Imagine you imagining that you love me and starting on a family tree. Imagine starting on a family tree. The papa is you and the mama is me. If your heart goes bumpity bump, it's love, love, love. If your throat comes up with a lump,
if it jumps,
it's love, love, love. If your knees won't knock it in love, it's love, love.
Yes, it's love.
If your cuckoo like a cuckoo in the clock, it's love.
Yes, it's love.
Imagine you imagining a cozy flat, complete with running dog and a cat. Imagine having running dog and a cat, and we will have welcome all over the mat. If your heart goes bumpity-bump, it's love, love, love. If your throat comes up with a lump, it's love, yes, it's love. If your knees go knock it in knock, it's love, love, love. If you're cuckoo like the cuckoo in the clock, it's love, love, love. If your knees go knock it in knock, and your heart goes bumpity bump, then it's love,
baby.
Then it's love.
Thank you. Say, Toby, where's Wally?
Well, I don't know, Donna. He's outside.
Oh, boy, am I excited. If I get trouble.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hello, Dinah.
Oh, well, look.
Oh, gee, I just had a call from the bank. It's about my safe deposit vault.
What's wrong?
My butter is melting. I gotta go right down.
Wally, take it easy. I've got a big surprise for you.
Oh.
Guess who's coming over tonight?
Oh.
Herbert Marshall.
No.
Yes.
Oh, gee, Herbert Marshall. He's one of my favorite actors. I'll never forget that picture he made about the life story of a tailor.
The life story of a tailor?
Yeah, the moon and six pants. You remember that.
Say, Wally, I don't know what I'm going to do. I haven't got a thing to serve Mr. Marshall.
Oh.
Would you run down to the corner and pick up some cold cuts?
Cold cuts? Yeah. For Herbert Marshall? Why, Dinah, for an English gentleman, the thing to serve is tea and crumpets.
Really?
Certainly, certainly. Why, every afternoon at 4, every Englishman just has to have his tea and crumpets. They even do it in the British Army.
They do?
Yeah. Why, when the RAF bombers are over Berlin, they drop everything and reach for the tea and crumpets.
Oh.
They drop everything and reach for the tea and crumpets. Oh, I thought you didn't hear me.
Oh. Say, Wally, are you sure Mr. Marshall is a tea drinker?
Oh, I'm positive. Listen, I got it confidentially that when tea was hard to get, he used to sit around and suck on a hot spoon.
Oh. Listen, you better... After that one, you better get going. Mr. Marshall might be hungry.
Yeah, and you'd better call the employment agency and get a butler.
A butler? Oh, now, Wally, that's putting on the dog a little, isn't it?
I'm telling you, Dinah, that's the way the British do things.
Well, I'll see what I can do. You better run down to the market now. Hurry
okay.
Up.
Oh, gosh. Gosh. Oh, what a market. This supermarket is so big it's confusing. I'd better ask directions from someone. Say, clerk, how far is it to the tea department?
Well, you walk straight down the aisle, past the vegetables, then you turn right and keep walking. Now you're in baked beans. Then you walk and walk and walk, and now you're in spaghetti. Then you turn left, and then you walk and walk and walk.
And then I stop.
Why do you stop?
To notify my draft board I'm leaving the city.
And then you...
Oh, let's skip it, let's skip it. Look, where can I find the cheese department?
Oh, just follow your nose.
Is it that far? Look, I'll have to carry quite a bit of packages here. You better give me a bag.
Oh, I'm sorry. The government is asking everyone to bring their own.
Say, what happened to all the bags?
You can stand there wearing those pants and ask a question like that?
Well, now, listen here. I got a lot of shopping to do. Just tell me where I can find the vegetable department.
In Counter J.
Thanks.
Hello, Bart. Hello there. Hello, Dinah.
Bart, I didn't know you were here. Have you been here long?
No, I just arrived. And when I walked in, the telephone was ringing. I hope you don't mind, but I answered it.
Oh, no, thank you very much. Who was it?
Some fellow named Wally Brown.
Oh, yes.
Dinah, you seem to think that I was your butler.
Oh, Bart, I haven't got any butler. That was Wally's idea. He thinks you won't feel at home unless you've got a butler serving you tea and crumpets. You do drink tea, don't you?
Drink it? I positively guzzle it. 10 cups a day...
10 cups a day?
Yeah, it is a frightful amount, Dinah. I sometimes wonder if my blood isn't 4/5 tea.
Oh, really?
As a matter of fact, I once gave some blood for a transfusion. When the patient came to, he sat up and said, "No cream and 1 lump of sugar, please."
Oh, come by.
You know what tea means to the British, Dinah? Why, every afternoon at 4, an Englishman just has to have his tea. Even the boys in the British Army.
They do?
They do, indeed. When the RAF bombers are over Berlin, they drop everything and reach for their tea.
Yes. Well, Bart, Wally Brown just told that joke 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know. I just got it.
Say, Bart, you know, I can read tea leaves.
You mean you can foretell the future? What do you see in this cup, Dinah, besides soggy tea leaves?
I see a tall, exceedingly handsome young man coming into our lives.
Does he have a sister?
No, but he comes speaking words of wisdom. Listen.
With summer just around the corner, anyone would welcome a shortcut in those long hours spent in planning meals, marketing, and working in the kitchen. So, ladies, why not begin right at the Bird's Eye Frosted Foods case in your Bird's Eye store? Now, that way, you can look over a grand selection of quick frozen Bird's Eye foods available, serve yourself, and start your meal planning right there. That saves time, and your Bird's Eye foods will save you time in the kitchen, too. Yes, they cut kitchen work about in half. For Bird's Eye vegetables are all cleaned and prepared and ready to cook, requiring no work for you. They're delicious, too, with a grand garden fresh goodness that Bird's Eye has sealed in for you by quick freezing. And no Bird's Eye frosted food requires any ration points. So to save points and time, select your own Bird's Eye frosted foods right out of the Bird's Eye case. But be sure to look for and get the package marked Bird's Eye. Now, there are many brands of frosted foods, you know, but only one complete line guaranteed to satisfy or your money back. That's Bird's Eye, delicious, time-saving Bird's Eye frosted foods.
Thank you, Toby. Now, Bart, wouldn't you like to take a turn at reading the tea leaves?
I'll take a fling at it, Dinah. Now, let me see. I stir the tea leaves tenderly with my index finger.
That's right.
Look, they begin to take shape.
Uh-huh.
I see a tortuous road winding through the heavy jungle growth.
Really?
Can it be? Yes, it is. The Burma Road.
Oh, that's wonderful, Bart. Let me look.
Here.
Bart, that's not the Burma Road.
No? What is it?
Crack in the cup. Would you like to try again, Bart?
No, I've had enough fortune-telling for one day. You know what I would like to do, though, Dinah? Just sit here while you warble a song.
Oh, the perfect guest. How would you like to hear It Had to Be You? That's one of Eddie Cantor's favorite tunes, you know, and Mr. Cantor's celebrating his 35th anniversary in show business. Congratulations, boss.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I've wandered around and finally found the somebody who be true, could make me be blue, and even be glad just to be sad thinking of you. Some others I've seen might never be me. Might never be cross or try to be boss, but they wouldn't do. For nobody else gives me a thrill. Down in my heart, dear, I you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you.
Oh, that was wonderful, Dinah.
Thanks.
By the way, didn't you sing that song at the Hollywood Canteen last week?
Oh, that's right. Say, after I left, I understand Lana Turner came in.
That she did, and she was wearing the most enchanting white bathing suit.
Gee, what was it like?
Well, in most places, it was like Lana Turner.
Well, that reminds me, Bart, I took some color pictures of the boys at the canteen. Would you like to see them?
I'd love to, Dinah, but now don't go to any trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble, Bart. I've got them right in the next room. I'll be right back.
Well, hello. Say, you must be the new butler.
Oh, must I?
Say, Doc, give me a hand here, will you?
Certainly, certainly.
Oh, what bags, what bags. Woo, boy, am I glad I got here in time. You know, Miss Shaw's having England's greatest actor over for tea.
Who, Ronald Coleman?
But you think Ronald Coleman's a better actor than Herbert Marshall?
Is he? Why, no.
Oh, well. Well, say... I'm glad. You know, I don't think so either. And as a matter of fact, I know Herbert Marshall personally. We travel around in the same Hollywood set.
Are you quite sure?
Oh, my, listen, Doc, you wouldn't call me a liar, would you?
Not under the circumstances, chum.
Oh, well. Yeah, in fact, Bart and I have lunch together 3 or 4 times a week at the Brown Derby.
Mm-hmm. I ate there once myself.
Yeah. Bart's a great guy. One of the swellest guys in Hollywood.
And Beverly Hills.
And the... Yeah. But you know, he's got one big fault.
Oh, really?
You know how smooth he talks on the screen?
Uh-huh.
Well, when you talk to that guy in person, he always drops his H's.
Oh, horrible. Not Herbert Marshall.
Oh.
Say, I found the color pictures. Oh, hello, Wally.
Oh, hiya, Dinah.
Wally, why don't you go in the kitchen and fix the tea and crumpets now?
Me fix the tea and crumpets?
Yes.
What did you hire this stooge for?
Wally!
Well, let me handle the servants, Dinah. Listen, Doc, make yourself useful.
But, Wally, you don't understand. This is...
Yeah, I know, but come on, Doc. Come on the double, on
Wally,
the double.
Wally, this is Herbert Marshall.
Get those... good, good. And don't forget to fry those crumpets and don't forget to... Huh? Herbert Marshall!
Oh, sure, you remember me, Wally. We had lunch at the Derby yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Doc. That is, Mr. Marshall. Yes,
yes. Oh, how about lunch tomorrow?
Lunch tomorrow? Oh, fine. Order me, I'll take a large, tell them to put it, just, I don't care whether you have a... Oh, my goodness. Never mind, I lost my appetite.
Oh, poor Wally.
I guess I put it on too strongly.
Well, he's always talking himself into something he can't get out of. He'll get over it, Bart.
No, Donna, the awful truth is I am a bit of a jerk.
Herbert Marshall, a jerk?
A double jerk. Every time I'm on a radio show, look what happens. Tonight, I bruise Wally Brown's sensibilities.
Oh, well, I wouldn't feel that way about it. Barty...
And when Archie invited me over to Duffy's Tavern, what did I do? I sang his beautiful song, Leave Us Face It.
And what happened?
Leave Us Face It, I loused it up.
Well, I'm sure it's not your fault, Bart.
Perhaps you're right, Dinah. Maybe I'm not built for these evening shows. Maybe those morning programs are more my speed.
You mean life can be beautiful with John's other wife on Honeymoon Hill?
No, I mean those cheer-up, get-happy programs.
Oh, I know the kind you mean.
Your house could cave in, the dog could chew up your last pair of nylons, and what do they tell you? Keep smiling. You turn on your dial, and the first thing you hear is... This is Happy Herbie, folks. Turn off your vacuum cleaner, girls. I've got some real dirt for you. Are you all smiling out there? Happy Herbie wants you to keep smiling.
And so does smiling Dinah.
And so does smiling Wally.
Hold that smile, folks, because we're coming at you with a happy little song.
Yes, sir. Here we go.
Brother, open up that face of yours and smile. Brother, open up that face of yours and smile.
If suicide is what you figure as you're pulling on that trigger,
brother, open up that face of yours and smile.
Oh, glory be!
Oh, glory be!
Oh, glory be!
Though it kills you, we're imploring you to S-M-I-R-E.
So it's lower and each upper, brother, smile.
Every breakfast, dinner, supper, brother, smile.
The more you smile, the more we'll get work. We might even get a network.
Open up that kiss, brother, smile.
We know our game.
We know our game.
We're out for fame.
We're out for fame.
And we're through the smiling Irishman.
We'll hang his head in shame. Never frown, you mustn't give in, brother, smile. Guys like us must make a living, brother, smile.
Down inside, you can't feel hateful, but we'd certainly be grateful
if you'd open up that puss and kindly smile.
And when you smile,
and when you smile,
forevermore,
forevermore,
think of Happy Herbie Marshall, Wally Brown, and Donna Shaw.
Oh, my. Say, that was a lot of fun. Reminds me of my old days in Nashville.
I see that Tom Williams, the famous horticulturist of Station WLAC in Nashville, just named his new prize iris the Dinah Shore.
Yes, he did, and it was mighty nice of him. I'm really thrilled, and to say thanks, Tom, I'd like to dedicate this next song to you.
Are over, life's a four leaf clover, sessions of depressions are through.
And now that dream is here beside me. Long the skies were overcast, but now that dream has passed, you're here at last. Chills run up and down my spine. Aladdin's lamp is mine. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one more I knew that I longed for was you.
That was charming, Dinah, but you know I always love your singing.
Ah, thank you so much, Bart.
Mr. Marshall.
Yes, Mr. Reed?
There's something I'd like to ask you. You have beautiful women fascinated by you, not only here in America, but in England. Tell me, how do you do it?
Now, really, Mr. Reed.
Oh, now tell me, Bart, what I want to know is, do you think American or English women are the most beautiful?
American women are the most beautiful, Dinah, and I can show you figures to prove it.
Well, all I know is I wish I could get all the girls to fall for me the way that you... Hey, I got an idea.
Good, what is it?
Well, you know they say the way to a person's heart is through his stomach?
Yes, yeah.
Well, instead of asking a girl to come up and see your etchings, you'd come right out with it and ask her to come up and see your cook.
Mm, I suppose once she's in your apartment, you'd waste no time. You'd immediately invite her into your kitchen.
Right, right. And boy, oh boy, this is what would really get her.
Tell me.
Well, I'd take her hand in mine, gently, you understand, very gently. I'd open the refrigerator door and let the lady pick the particular bird's-eye food she wants.
Yes, and then?
Oh, it's a cinch. She'd look eagerly, excitedly, and then she'd turn to me and whisper, "How tender, how desirable, how sweet."
Who, you?
No. The bird's-eye golden sweet corn in my refrigerator. You see, I've laid in a supply because at this time of year, people invariably go for bird's-eye golden sweet corn.
Really?
Yes, bird's eye golden sweet corn today is a delicious out-of-season treat. Something everyone ought to try right now, and it's so tender and garden fresh that you'd think you just picked the corn right out of your own cornfield.
You don't say.
Yes. And after I cook those plump, milky kernels of golden corn by merely taking them from the package and dropping them into boiling water, I would immediately cuddle very close to the young lady, and you know what she'd say?
Yes, fresh.
Exactly. Garden fresh. And that does describe bird's eye corn. Months ahead of the corn season, yet garden fresh. Now, that's because bird's eye quick freezes the corn when it's perfectly ripe so that all of its delicious flavor and its food values, too, are sealed in until you eat it. That's the beauty of quick freezing, you know.
I know. I'm very familiar with the quick freeze.
Good.
Mr. Reed, I think you have a great idea there, and I'll bet you, after the young lady and you have enjoyed that lovely meal, she's going to do a wonderful thing.
She is? What?
She enjoyed it so much, she'll be so eternally grateful to you.
Yes?
That out of sheer gratitude...
Yes?
She might even help you with the dishes.
We gals have to be on our toes in case any of you set your cap for a handsome sailor boy. Here's a way you might anchor him. Tell him, you've been around such a lot in your time. You know the hairpins by heart. The way they chase after you, babe, it's a crime. And the way you make love, it's an art. So let's find a corner and start. What do you say? Hey, babe,
How you doing today, babe? You look sort of shipshape to me, and I've sighted a few. Hey, babe, hi, babe, why not give me a try, babe? And maybe I'll make you mine, babe, 'cause I'm nuts about you. Hey, baby, what do you say, baby? How about being my crew? I need a lookout. Boy, some shade in the gown. Hey, Upsy Baron, the walk I share in a snuggle pot is for two. So be my pilot to love me, the islet, 'cause I'm nuts about you. Pretty baby, and what might your plans for today be? If you're lonesome on your own, well, I haven't a darn thing to do. People tell me it's the season when the gals like hugging and squeezing, and for some jolly delusion, baby, I'm nuts about you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks, Bart Marshall, for coming over. I hope you had a good time. It's time to say goodnight, and I hope you'll all be with us next week when John Garfield will be our guest. And you folks in San Francisco, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, and I'll be seeing you next Sunday to help you celebrate I Am an American Day. Good night, everybody.
This is Toby Reed saying better by Birdseye. Herbert Marshall appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Wally Brown can currently be seen in RKO Pictures 7 days ashore. Next Thursday, Birdseye Frosted Foods will again bring you the Dinosaur program with Wally Brown, Robert Emmett Dolan, and his orchestra, the Joseph Lilly Singers. Our special guest will be John Garfield. And now, goodbye from Birdseye. Until next week, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please check out our website, www.AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. For more old-time radio listening, tune in to www.RadioOutOfThePast.org in the Fred Bertelsen Room. Hey, see you next time!